From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1871 when the Sisters of St. Joseph opened Nazareth Academy for Girls in Rochester. 13 years later, the sisters would open a school for boys as well. And the initial enrollment, by the way, back in 1871, was 30 students. That would eventually swell to more than 1,500 students in the 1960s. And today, Nazareth is getting ready to move to a new home. The Rochester Catholic Diocese does not run the school. It's still operated by the Sisters of St. Joseph. And with their upcoming move, we wanted to take the opportunity to discuss what their approach to Catholic education means in 2017. You see, 70% of their students are not Catholic, even though Nazareth teaches with a strongly religious theme. And there is more diversity in the school than you'll find at many schools across Monroe County and Western New York. So what is the value of that diversity? How do they see the future of Catholic education? It's an educational theme day here on Connections, and let me go ahead and welcome my guests. Mary Martell is principal of Holy Cross School. Mary, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Also here is Deborah Hanmer, who is a parent of a couple of kids in Catholic elementary. Is that right?
That is.
And it's great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Sister Margaret Mancuso is principal of Nazareth Elementary. It's great to have you as well, Sister.
Thanks, Evan. It's great to be here.
What does Catholic education mean in 2017 to you, Sister?
Catholic education is, first of all, we teach the whole child. And so we are always looking at meeting the needs of the times, the needs of the culture. And we can help our children grow not only academically and emotionally, but also spiritually. So we feel like it's the whole picture, and we continue to meet the needs of the times. As we started in 1871 right up to the present, we've had a lot of evolutions, and this is a new change for us. We've just moved in July.
Moved where?
Moved to the former Sacred Heart School on Flower City Park. So we're still in the Maplewood neighborhood, and that's important for our families that they're still in the same neighborhood. And Parish is very excited because Sacred Heart opened in 1911, and our sisters, the Sisters of St. Joseph, were the first sisters to staff Sacred Heart. So now we're kind of coming full circle with sisters going back there.
This is a good chance for us to really build on some of the themes we discussed last hour. And we only briefly touched on this, but we will eventually this hour also discuss things like standardized testing, which, as I understand it, you get to kind of do things your own way, Sister.
Yeah? Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that autonomy has to be nice, I would assume.
It is nice.
We'll talk about that as well. But let me ask our other guests that same question. Mary, for you, what does Catholic education mean in 2017?
I agree with everything that Sister Margie has said, that, you know, in our Catholic schools, we strive to educate the whole child, and that spiritual component is a key element that brings us all together as a family and as a community. So we're able to not only support the whole child, but the whole family system that goes along with that.
Okay. And Deb, for you, as a parent, your two kids are how old?
They are both six.
Both six?
Yes.
Oh, I'm
yeah,
so
two
sorry.
Boys.
I'm just kidding. As a twin myself, I was apologizing on behalf of all twins for the grief that we can cause. It's an amazing age, isn't it?
It is.
And so get nice and close to that microphone for me so I can hear you nice and clearly. What does that, as a parent, what does Catholic education mean to you?
I think what it means to me is just that ability to balance, kind of like the inputs my kids are getting. It gives me comfort that I know they're getting sort of like the faith-based learning along with real excitement for math and reading and music and art. And Nazareth has just been a great experience in sort of like addressing their needs spiritually as well as academically.
Okay. Well, Sister, from what I have read, your school draws from, I think, 13 different districts mm-hmm. in the area.
That's correct.
So tell me how the student base comes together for your school.
Well, let me go back 7 years. We were the former Nazareth Hall, which was on Raines Park. In 2010, Nazareth Academy closed and Nazareth Hall was moved into the Academy building. At that time, the name changed to Nazareth Elementary. So we had a base from Nazareth Hall, continued to do a lot of marketing. But I think for many parents, they see it as a Catholic school. Others see it as a private school. And so we draw from that dimension. We also have children of many alums from the academy days, the high school days, and so they know the history of the sisters as educators and the history of Nazareth is providing quality education. So they seek us out. And many of our families who live even in the suburbs, they want diversity, so they believe in joining the city coming to Nazareth in the city. To me, it's sort of a mini version of urban-suburban in reverse. 67% of our children were from the city this past year. And so it's word of mouth more than anything. I think we do marketing, but it's word of mouth. If parents are happy, they're going to tell others.
And interesting. So a third of your students do not come from the city of Rochester.
Correct.
And those parents have told you in many cases they are intentional about seeking out diversity.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see as the benefits and values of diversity that you have?
I see it as this is the world we live in today, and this is the world these children are going to grow up in when they get to high school and college and work in their careers. So to start them at a young age where we just accept one another as all children of God and we're all equal and no comparisons or... It's just a way that we can model for them of the world they're going to live in.
It just feels this week impossible that everything from my brain doesn't go back to what we saw this weekend. And that just feels more poignant than ever now, doesn't
mm-hmm.
it?
It does.
And Deb, how do you feel about that?
I'm new to the Rochester area. This is the end of my first year here. And I moved up from D.C. And, you know, as the mom of two African-American boys, it was extremely important for me to find an option for my kids where there was like kind of true diversity. And I got a lot of push to kind of...
Hold on, back it up. When you say true diversity, what do you mean?
When I came to visit a number of schools, I got a lot of quotes about sort of the diversity numbers in school and a big push from people that the only way to get kind of a quality education was to move to the suburbs. And it was really important for me for the values the values of my family, that my children were able to sort of like live in a culturally diverse environment that's felt like, you know, like similar to the culture and city life of a D.C. And I wanted to live in the city. So looking around, even at the choices within Rochester, Nazareth just stood out to me. When I walked in the building, I saw kids of all backgrounds racially, as well as, a mix of economic status that was very clear. And that also was extremely important to me, that my kids interact with all types of children and families from different backgrounds. So Nazareth and meeting Sister Margaret, it jumped out. I didn't need to kind of hear or read anything or see a website. I could see it in action in the classes.
Deb, I don't know how else to say this other than when you said, you know, true or real diversity, it stuck in my brain because sometimes you have conversation with parents, again, who have really good intentions about where their kids go to school, what kind of environment the kids go to school, and whom they go to school with. And sometimes it's a little bit like checking the box diversity. Do we have X, Y, and Z, and can we say to parents, but is that, you know, really representative? And to you, it seems like coming up from Washington, you were very sensitive to not just accepting kind of the brochure version of what diversity might mean.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there, and everyone as a parent has to make a choice that's right for their family. My family is an interracial family. My husband's white. Making sure that our children get to interact with teachers who are used to working with a diversity of students. I was very conscious of my children not being like kind of like the only or one of a handful of kids in a classroom, simply because I think the experience in working with students from diverse backgrounds, it's a skill, as well as, you know, like knowing how to teach reading and math. It's a skill to interact and understand and see kids for who they are, not what they look like.
Mm-hmm. Mary, some thoughts on that, the value of diversity in school?
We, too, are a fairly diverse school because we are the only Catholic elementary within the diocese that's located in the city of Rochester. So we do serve a diverse population. I think it completes our school. Children themselves are naturally inclusive to everyone. They don't notice that we're diverse. They just notice that we're a school. And I think our families appreciate all the different things that each one of the children and the families brings to our community. It makes our family stronger. We learn from each other, and we focus more on what similarities we have, how much we all have in common, because we've all sought out the same place to be, the same Catholic school. We weren't just plunked there by our district. We've chosen to be there together, so we all treat each other as a family.
And do you agree with Deb that there is a skill involved, and it's kind of a cultural competency? It's some of what we discussed in our last hour, which is the importance of saying, whatever the racial or makeup of your teaching staff is, are they culturally competent? Are they understanding of diversity and backgrounds and inclusion? Do you think that that's true?
I do. I think that when you work with a diverse population, you have to have teachers and staff that are sensitive to the needs of all of their children, that are compassionate to know and to learn about home lives and interests and cultures and different things, and be sensitive with that in the classroom, to allow children to share those things within the classroom and to help everyone to be accepting of all of those things.
Well, we're talking about Catholic education in 2017, and kind of the news hooked this hour, Nazareth Elementary School moving to the former Sacred Heart Cathedral School. And we'll get back to that conversation in a second, but I know that Mary in Rochester wanted to jump into the conversation by phone. Go ahead, Mary.
I can't hear anything.
Oh, turn it right up. Hold on one second there. See that knob right there? Go ahead and turn it up. So I want to make sure all of our guests can hear you. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi. Mary Lee Miller. I'm an educator. This is more of a comment. I was listening last hour and then listening now. But perhaps this is through the lens of what's been going on in Charlottesville. But it's interesting that the conversation of diversity in education even has to happen at all. It just seems to me that if we really want to raise children who are aware, culturally aware, accepting of all different kinds of people, that if the schools, including students and staff, were innately diverse, perhaps we would raise a different level of consciousness and awareness in our society in general.
Okay. So, Mary, again, the kind of, I don't know if it's a complaint or kind of sum that up for me again. And yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think it's just more of an observation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've taught for 28 years, 30 years. I recently retired from 28 years in Rochester City Schools. And I just wish politics and racism and all of that aside, I guess it's just a wish. I'm just making a comment. I just wish that schools were innately diverse.
Mm-hmm.
Period, end of story, so that didn't even have to be part of the conversation.
Yeah. Sister, thank you very much for the phone call, Mary. Sister Margaret, you want to start with the response? What do you think of that?
I understand what she's saying, that it would be wonderful if it was everyone just accepted everyone as they are and didn't have to think about it. But unfortunately, it is our society today, and we have many opportunities to help the children understand, because they hear the news, they hear comments at home, and so we can help them understand what people might be talking about or what's happening in the news. As far as staff, I want to say that we do not have a big diversity on our staff. Mm-hmm. As far as
almost nobody does locally. That's just
the
reality.
Sure, yeah. It is the reality. At the same time, again, as Mary was saying, we're very sensitive to all of our children and their backgrounds, whether they're coming from Vietnam or Nepal or, you know, inner city or wherever they're from. We work together, and we do programs as a school staff to help with this acceptance of everyone. And just a simple example is we might dismiss at 3:00 in the afternoon, and we might have a social event at 5:30. And our children, when they arrive at 5:30, they're hugging each other and, like, so excited to see each other, like, you came, we're all together again. And it's like, they don't think about color. It's just, we're children. And sometimes if someone says to me, what's the diversity breakdown? I know it because I'm the principal, but I really don't look at them day to day as different cultures or different religions or socioeconomic. I look at them as our children, our family.
Okay. Mary, let me ask you, as the principal of Holy Cross School, which is, again, the only Catholic elementary in the city of Rochester under the diocese umbrella, right?
Yes.
So what is the breakdown, the background of your student body? I assume it is different than other Catholic elementary schools under the diocese, but I don't know if that's wrong.
Well, I can't really speak to the enrollment of all the other Catholic schools, but to Holy Cross I can. And there is diversity across the diocese, to be sure. Our particular Catholic school, we serve suburban children. We serve children who live in the Shalott community where we are located, and also the suburbs of Hilton, Irondequoit, Webster, Chilai. So we draw from a large base. We have children of different faiths. We have refugee children. We have children from our own parish. So there's a mix of children from all around the area.
Yeah, and our caller said, you know, maybe she's just more sensitive to this issue right now because of Charlottesville. And I think everybody probably is right now. It's sort of a raw moment. But, you know, Mary, I understand, you know, your frustration that, first of all, can't we just sort of accept diversity? But second of all, why can't you sort of wish there was diversity everywhere? And there isn't. I mean, this is a really sort of by choice kind of self-segregated community if you look around the numbers. And I would just encourage you to go back to the reporting that we did back in December. We called it Degrees of Diversity. And we looked at teaching staffs, yes, but we also had numbers on student populations. And it's pretty striking. We'll go ahead and repost that for you today if you want to take a look at that. It is certainly striking. So let me turn the conversation in a different direction. And I wanted to ask, first of all, Sister Margaret, what are the myths and what are the realities when you're taught by nuns?
Well,
I should ask Deb that question.
Yes. Let me say, first of all, I grew up in Catholic schools myself, grammar school, high school, and college. And some of the myths that you hear, I never experienced. I was taught by the Sisters of St. Joseph, our community.
So like what? What are the myths you remember hearing?
Some of the things about how strict the teachers were and the rulers and that kind of thing.
Man, those myths are everywhere about
they
nuns.
Are.
Those nuns are brutal.
They come up every conversation, but I never experienced it. I grew up in Oswego, New York, and the Sisters of St. Joseph from Rochester had a school there. The reality is, first of all, our school is unique in that we have 15 sisters connected with the school right now, and I don't think there's any Catholic school. When I worked in the Catholic schools office, there was no Catholic school with more than a couple of sisters at the time. So we have 15 sisters connected with the school, which is very exciting, and our children get to experience them, and some are volunteers, some are on the core staff as teachers, administrators, IT coordinator. So we have the nurse, school nurse. Our children are experiencing sisters, and they don't know sisters in the same way as we did when we were growing up. So we have an opportunity to teach them about our life, too. And our,
so tell me a little bit more, because one of our listeners, Jan, emailed and said, what's the benefit of having Catholic nuns on faculty?
I think there's that extra dimension for us at Nazareth. Number one, Nazareth is our ministry, our Sisters of St. Joseph. It's our congregational school. And so to have the sisters there speaks to our commitment to education and especially being a presence in the city. Another advantage is just the background. As you may have some teachers on your staff who are not Catholic, and there's this other dimension of helping them to understand different parts of the Catholic faith.
Oh, interesting, because as we mentioned, at your school, 70% of the students are not Catholic.
Correct.
Even though it's Catholic education.
Mm-hmm.
What percentage of the teachers are not Catholic? Do you know?
I don't have that broken down. The majority are Catholic.
But there are some.
There are some who are not, yes.
Okay.
But very faith-filled, faith, just as our parents are who chose Catholic school. They're very faith-filled.
Okay. So for the students, the 70% who are not Catholic, mm-hmm. Any idea how that sort of breaks down? I mean, do you have students from different religious backgrounds? Do you have students from different, you know, sort of sections of Christianity? I mean, how does that break out?
I would say the majority of the non-Catholics are Christian. And when a parent applies and I tour them, I always explain that this is who we are and we won't change that. So I need them to accept and embrace our Catholic religion and our environment, our faith-filled environment. We're not out to make them all Catholic, but we are there to support whatever spirituality is going on in their own lives. The majority are Christian, though. We've had just a couple that weren't, and we respected that maybe they couldn't make the sign of the cross, but they still were at our services and participated as they could.
I know someone who sends sends their daughters to Catholic school, I think they said that that their girls were going to have their first and last communion on the same day. And they said, you know what? Even if that's not our faith, the education is so good that they couldn't see themselves taking out of it. So, so the bottom line is you seek to be welcoming.
We are. I'm not saying that because I'm the principal, but I feel that our entire staff is very welcoming, and that's what parents reflect back to me when they come in to see the school. And we just want everyone to feel like this is a happy environment, this is a safe, nurturing environment. And a lot of parents, especially some of the children that go to maybe the Baptist church or different Protestant denominations, they want their children to form a good moral conscience, to be able to make good decisions based on gospel values rather than what society is saying is important in life. So they know that at the Catholic school they're going to get those gospel values, and so that's why they choose us too.
All right, so in our second half hour, we're going to kind of get into more of that, the values, especially how they structure teaching. I don't know, at your school, at Holy Cross, do you have to go with state standardized tests?
That's a decision that the diocese makes, and we have chosen. We do follow the core curriculum in this testing.
So it's going to be interesting to talk about how the schools, you know, differ on that approach. A little more autonomy at Nazareth. Where did that stereotype come from, Sister? The nuns with the rulers. We have to eliminate that.
I don't know, honestly, because I didn't.
Was that like some fable years ago or something?
I don't know. I think schools in general, not just Catholic schools in general were strict if you go back decades. Public schools were stricter. Everything.
Sure. So it wasn't just the nuns.
It's not the nuns. It's not just Catholic schools. No.
We love the nuns.
Thank you.
Deb, what do you make of the interaction and the quality of the approach and the values that Sister Margaret's talking about?
I think what Sister Margaret is saying resonates. When I first visited Nazareth, I think one of the things that struck me was just like walking the building with Sister Margaret, the warm interactions between her and the students. I think the values that my kids come home, like things they come home repeating about, you know, learning about service to others, and helping different groups and communities, again, along with their academic, their more academic learning, it really resonates in our household. Like we can sort of build off of the conversations that have been happening at school, and they connect very directly to the same values that we hold in our family. And the teachers, all of the teachers, and I don't, sometimes the boys are confused about who's a sister or not. I think all of the teachers have that balance of kind of like the structure, which was one of the things, even though you could look at it in, you know, the negative or positive way, like that sort of idea of structure, and that there are sort of like things that are good and bad or right and wrong. That sort of structure and belief system resonated with me, as well as the warmth and nurturing. That kind of balance, I think, is what helped me with my choice for Nazareth.
Okay. And at Holy Cross, Mary, how much do you seek to intermingle the ideas of teaching core curriculum and also faith-based values?
That's what we're all about in a Catholic school. So while, you know, we have excellence in our academics and we strive for our students to be as successful as they possibly can, I think what makes them highly successful is that opportunity to learn about service to others and kindness to each other and appreciating diversity and all the other things that we can talk about. You know, we want our kids to be respectful of others, and we have the opportunity to talk about our faith in that. We can share what Jesus would do, how does God want us to treat each other, and that adds a whole nother component that our public school counterparts cannot do, which really helps our children to embrace those concepts of morality, really.
All right, I want to get our only break of the hour. When we come back, we're going to talk about some other issues pertaining to school in 2017. As we move into the 2017-2018 school year, we're talking about Catholic education. Mary Martell is principal of Holy Cross School. Deb Hanmer is a parent of a couple of kids, a couple of six-year-olds, and talking about her perspective as a parent. And Sister Margaret Mancuso is principal of Nazareth Elementary, which is getting a new home. Remind us again, where's the new home?
At 311 Flower City Park, former Sacred Heart School.
Are you excited? I mean, if the first day were tomorrow, could you do it?
No. And I only say that because we just finished moving on July 31st, so we're still surrounded by boxes and books. But we're getting very excited, excited.
Let's go ahead and continue our conversation after this break. If you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. I'm Evan Dawson, Wednesday on The Next Connections. The Google memo story has become a kind of Rorschach test for how you feel about modern feminism, gender in the workplace. We'll talk about the difference between men and women at work, fact and fiction. Then in our second hour, NPR released its recent list of the top albums by women of all time. We take a look at that at the local level. Talk to you Wednesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Rick emailed the program and just asked for more numbers on diversity. I don't have a whole lot, Rick, other than teachers. Well, I've got some of the student data as well. But just to kind of follow up with Rick, because in our first half hour, we did talk about the value of diversity and also some of the ways that different districts and different schools approach making sure teachers are prepared to work with their students. In our the latest data comes from the 2015-2016 school year. Some quick numbers for you. 82% of public school teachers in this country are white. 49% of students are white. So it's a big discrepancy nationally. Monroe County, it's 92% public school teachers are white. And school teachers outside of the city of Rochester and Monroe County, 98% white. In the Catholic diocese, 97% in the 2015-2016 school year, teachers were white. So the diocese kind of lines up exactly with Monroe County. That's not unusual. That's become very common. And you've heard all of our guests already talk about the value of diversity and how they're sort of addressing that. So Allison in Canandaigua emailed, and she wanted to know how much attention is there to hiring teachers who come from widely ranging backgrounds, whether it is race, but also economic, different life experience as well. So why don't we go around the table and ask that. When you're looking for teachers, are you recruiting teachers from different backgrounds? How important is it to go out and try to find that?
Well, for us at our school, we go through the diocese. So the diocese goes through, recruiting and screening mm-hmm. for the teacher process. And then when we do have an opening, they come to us. We do also have a little flexibility there in where, if we have teachers who we've had in the building or substitutes, we have the flexibility to hire those as well. I think just in general, we're not against hiring teachers of a diverse background. They're just not there for us they're not in the pool for us to draw from. So we have some diversity on our staff, but definitely more diversity among our children than among our staff, for
okay.
sure.
Sister, same question.
We do our own advertising when we have openings, and not only do we do it maybe online or through actually the diocese as well, but we will advertise at the area colleges to see if we can get graduates from Fisher or Nazareth or wherever. And again, it's just who applies. It's not like we wouldn't welcome them, but they just aren't there to apply.
Okay. Let's get back to your phone calls. Jan in Penfield next. Go ahead, Jan.
Hi. This is a great topic. I guess my question is, especially for Nazareth, how much does it cost and what can you do if you can't afford it?
Thank you, Jan. It's a great question. Sister?
Jan, the cost for Nazareth is for kindergarten through grade six, it's $5,700 for the year. And for preschool, it's $6,200 for the year. We have financial aid and several major donors and lots of small donors who contribute to our financial aid fund. So I would say 70 to 75% of our families get financial aid. So I always say to families, if you feel this is the school for your child, then we will work it out to make it possible for you. So we can give anywhere from $500, maybe up to $2,500 or $3,000 off tuition. We try to spread the money out so that everyone who needs it gets some support.
Okay. And Mary?
Our tuition is a $4,250 for this year for parishioner-based and about $5,200 for non-parishioner. We also provide almost 80% of our students with some form of financial aid. None of our students attend for free, but everyone pays. We make sure that it's accessible and affordable for everyone. And we, too, have the generosity of our parishioners who provide scholarships from grants through the diocese. There are many ways. We fundraise. We try to find as many resources as we can to help our families who want Catholic education.
And Mary, when it comes to the challenges that all schools are facing in our area, our region is not one that's growing in population. And so different districts have different issues when it comes to that. And certainly in the city of Rochester, there have been discussions on school closures, et cetera. I know the diocese has had to make some decisions. What's the biggest challenge that you face? I mean, how is the student base? And are, you know, are you comfortable in your home there on Lake Avenue?
Well, I'm happy to say that we have the largest enrollment of all the diocesan elementary schools. And our school has a unique history of having been one of the schools that was closed and then allowed to reopen. And since we have reopened, we have continued to grow each year, and we are very proud of that fact.
When did it close and when did it reopen?
We closed in 2008, and during that time, we kept our preschool open and continued to grow there, and then we reopened in 2011.
How emotional was that for families?
It was an amazing experience we had, especially for our pastor, Father Thomas Wieland, at the time, who just asked and continually fought for Catholic education, not only at Holy Cross, but throughout the diocese. He's just a champion there. And it was a joyous experience for us to be able to reopen.
Okay. Sister, for you, again, you're moving.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean closing.
No.
What does it mean for your enrollment, and how has that gone over the years?
For the move?
Just the size of the school itself. And
we've stayed pretty stable. I've only been at Nazareth 7 years. We've stayed pretty stable, anywhere from about 175 to 200, within that range. Our greatest challenge is when our children come, is keeping them. They might stay a few years, and then they hit a point where they can no longer afford to stay, and that's what's difficult. We get new students in it every year at every grade level, but it's maintaining the ability to continue to be there over time financially. That's our challenge. Because we're not a diocesan school, we have no parish support or diocesan support financially. So the Sisters of St. Joseph are committed to keeping it open, but we've seeked many, many, many donors. We've had some amazing donors, large and small, come through to help us. Just yesterday, I heard of a $1,000 donation that just came in to be a scholarship for a back-to-school child, to help a child come back to school. We've got another commitment that's huge that we got over 10 years, a large commitment every year for 10 years to our scholarship fund to help children. So our challenge is maintaining donors as well as enrollment. I think if we didn't have to charge tuition, we'd be overflowing. There's no question, because parents will cry sometimes when they have to leave. And we do everything we can, but they just reach a point where they can't. And they're looking ahead to college, too.
Mm. Let me grab another phone call. Carlene in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Carlene.
Yes, I'm calling because I went to 14 years of Catholic schools, including Nazareth Academy and Nazareth College, and I cannot speak more highly in Catholic grammar schools of the quality of education that is given, the ability to excel that's given to every child that is not necessarily given in a public school, even though they try very hard. There's something so terribly different about the respect in the Catholic school that is the cornerstone of the education, and how a young children is learns how to attend, how to get along with others regardless of where they come from. And I cannot compliment them, and I'm so more highly, because most of the women that I knew that attended Nazareth went on to be leaders in our community and still are. And I have a simple question to ask. Mm-hmm. Do you have transportation from the city school district or are the other school districts? Is there any busing for students? And do you afford lunches and programs of that nature for children who cannot, are of lower income? I don't know what's in your program.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Carlene, thank you for the phone call, okay. By the way. Our guests, I'm sure, greatly appreciate the sentiments as well. Sister, go ahead.
Yes, Carlene, we do get busing. That's New York State law, that children can be bused anywhere to a school of choice within a 15-mile radius. That's why we're able to draw on all of these school districts. We've had buses from all the way from Webster to Spencerport and every place in between. So the bus is provided by New York State, which is wonderful. As far as meals, being a city school in the Rochester City School District, that is called a Title I school district, and therefore we provide free and reduced breakfast and lunches for our children. So that, again, we know that they're getting two good meals a day, and we're happy to do that. And we've hired our own cooks at Nazareth, so we're proud of the meals that they create for these children, following government regulations. But yes, they are served every day.
Okay. Mary, your school?
And our busing works the same way, with mandated, mm-hmm. within a 15-mile radius. And we are blessed to be part of the Rochester City School District school lunch program. So all of the children in our school eat breakfast and lunch for free, as well as a snack program through Wegmans that brings a daily healthy fruit or vegetable snack to our kids.
This is the second straight hour that we've had either a phone call or an email. I just got an email asking if your schools teach cursive. I mean, cursive is the issue of the day here. It is. You did not expect to light it up, but my goodness, it lit it up last hour, especially with Dr. Cecilia Golden and Van White disagreeing over cursive. That had some nice fireworks there. Mary Martell, principal of Holy Cross School. Cursive, yes or no?
Yes, we teach cursive, and no, there are no rulers involved in the handwriting process.
Cursive, yes. That's I guess at this point you would have to say that that's in the old school category from what we're seeing. But so cursive stays there. What about at Nazareth?
Yes, at Nazareth as well. We introduce it in second grade, and it's taught formally in the third grade program. We believe it is becoming a lost art, but we think it's important for children to be able to write their names, sign their signatures, and also to read it. A lot of the children come in can't read it. Reading, if they come from a different school that hasn't taught handwriting, and they might enter in fourth or fifth grade, that's a challenge because all they want to do is print. But we try to get them to at least put a heading on a paper with cursive.
Deb, for you, are your children ready to do cursive?
They are not ready to do cursive, but I'm sure their grandmoms will be happy to hear this. They talk about it a lot.
Yeah, it's a throwback. It's amazing how many people get fired up when we talk. We could have done an hour on cursive. Maybe we'll do an hour on cursive coming up here. And frankly, on handwriting, how quickly kids' hands get tired because they're not used to writing. Mm-hmm. Kids are used to using technology to communicate, and you know, for those of us who used to write all day, it doesn't happen as much anymore. We're talking about the future of Catholic education, and I want to turn to the question of testing. And I'll start with Sister Margaret on this one. Sister Margaret Mancuso, the principal of Nazareth Elementary, the Sisters of St. Joseph run the school, not the diocese.
Now, correct.
As we're going to hear from Mary Martell over at Holy Cross, the diocese has chosen to go with state testing, and we'll talk about that. You have not, mm-hmm. and so how do you test? And tell me about that decision-making process.
The decision-making came from, we did try the New York State test for a couple of years, and we found that our top students were getting very frustrated because they were timed. They were 3 days long for English language arts and 3 days for math. The children who struggled were even more frustrated with the length of the tests. And so we looked at the value of that one testing period at the end of the year and decided for our children it wasn't of benefit. I smile about it when I talk to the teachers because I came from the diocese. I was assistant superintendent for curriculum before I went to Nazareth. And we did all the testing. I did all the training of our principals and our teachers. And but being a private Catholic school, we could opt out. And so we chose to opt out, and we have our own assessment program. We assess on computers 4 times a year, and it gives us a good breakdown of all the skills the children have and all the skills they need.
What's the difference? Kind of compare those tests and the way you do it 4 times a year versus the way the state standards are.
The state standards are broad, and so you're getting a broader scope. and you get a number. You get a 4, you get a 3, or you get a 2, or you get a 1. And so it's a broad stroke of how they might test against fourth graders across the state at this particular point in time, where our tests are looking at each individual child's growth. We don't compare child to child. We're looking at, does this child grow in a year? Does it grow, make a growth of 10 months? Does it grow a year and a half? Does this child grow a year and a half? So we're just working at each individual child where they're at and helping them reach their goals. Some children come in with gaps in learning when they arrive, and so it might take us 2 years to catch them up and fill in those gaps. But these assessments help us see what's happening, where are the weaknesses still, and they inform instruction so the teachers can then turn around and work on what's needed through these tests.
How long are the tests?
The tests on the computers or the New York State?
Well, your tests, the 4 tests you do, I mean, how much testing are we actually talking about?
Oh, you might be talking about like a class period on the computer. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we do it like 4 times a year just to measure reading scores and math.
But it's not 3 days of it.
No, not 3 days or a couple of hours in each. And it's just much more meaningful. And so we made a decision as a faculty to opt out. And honestly, as a principal, when I get records about a new student, test scores from New York State are the last thing I look at. I want to look at their progress reports and see how they're doing.
You really don't think that that's a very effective measure?
I didn't feel it was for our children with their needs and their backgrounds. I haven't looked at the new revised test. Mm-hmm. New York State's been working at revision because there was a lot of feedback, as you know, through the years.
Sure,
lot of parent and teacher feedback on those tests. As they were when we were giving them, we didn't feel they were of value.
If you were,
for us.
I mean, given your resume, you have a lot of, I think a lot of wisdom on this subject. What would you tell state leaders who are in charge of not only creating the test, but the actual testing regimes and the length, et cetera, what would you tell them that obviously, I think you probably tell them to adopt your model, but what are some of the easier changes that you think is kind of low-hanging fruit that they could do?
Sure. Well, I think they've made some of the changes already. They've looked at cutting back on the amount of time and days of the testing. I think they've gotten more teachers involved in creating the tests, get into the classrooms and see how teachers are teaching, because it throws a child off if you're teaching in one style and the tests are another that they're not used to either. But I think they have involved more teachers, and I think we're going to see improvement across the board. And we'll look at them again as they are recreated.
Okay. And how often do you hear from parents questions about tests?
Never about
Never.
The state test. I think once in my 7 years has a new parent come in and asked, do we give New York State tests? And we report to our parents 4 times a year with report cards. And if the child's in the academic intervention program, they get another progress report along with the regular report card. So our parents are in communication with our teachers of what's going on.
Never had a parent say, I'd really like you to do the state test.
No. We actually, the second year we gave them, we did have parents opt out.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Deb, again, you moved up, just been here for about a year, you said.
Yes.
From Washington.
Yes.
How familiar were you with the debate over this issue, broadly speaking? Obviously, you're coming in and choosing a school that you don't have to worry about it, but how familiar were you with this issue?
I actually work for a charter school from D.C. I work up here remotely, so I am pretty well-versed in the standardized tests debate. And so, I have probably a professional answer, but my personal answer for, I think, my children and the choice I made is I find that the communication from Nazra, from the teachers, just on like a daily basis, when I'm like dropping off to hear what was going on or through report cards and parent-teacher conferences, they're thorough. They tell me about kind of like the learning progress, things I can do at home, and kind of where behavioral pushes that I might need to give. And that to me is much more meaningful than getting a number at the end of the school year. I come from a family. My mother was a teacher, retired as a teacher. My mother-in-law was a teacher locally. So I have a lot of experience in thinking about like kind of like how to measure progress and growth and success for my own family and children. And that was, again, part of my choice, like not needing that, not wanting the year to necessarily be interrupted with a focus on sort of testing. Yeah.
Clearly, though, as a parent, if you felt like that was creating a gap, the fact mm-hmm. that your kids are going to go to a school that doesn't do that, you know, that you would address that. But it doesn't sound like you think there's any gap at all.
I don't. I think, and again, each parent makes a choice individually, but I don't think testing or not testing produces a gap. The curriculum, the instructors who are delivering it, the culture of the school environment, and the leaders and their skill and ability to kind of like make it all work together, I think inform the outcome at the end of the school year. And the test, you know, my mom used to always say, I don't need a standardized test at the end of the year to know who couldn't read or write. Like, I think that's what you're talking, you're depending on the experience of the teachers and leaders who are in the building and working with them throughout the year for that outcome.
Does this inform, or is this informed by your professional opinion? Is there any difference there?
I'm here to celebrate Nazareth, so I think I'll leave it here as a parent.
You're yes, here as a parent. Exactly. See, look at exactly. that. Look, no, that's certainly fair. Let me ask Mary Martell, the principal of Holy Cross School, that you know, so the diocese is going down that road with state tests, and you know, you've got to deal with that framework here. You want to complain about it? This is a great chance. You got a microphone.
I don't want to complain about it. I have my own personal opinions on standardized testing. But I think within our building, within the diocese, that the data that we get from our children taking the New York State assessments helps us drive instruction. It helps us know where we may be lacking in teaching certain areas, how we can improve in the future. We use it as one small piece of how we look at the children as a whole. So we do an iReady assessment 3 times a year for the children. And then, you know, there's observation and other assessments that the teachers do. So it's one tiny piece of how we look at how well the children are doing. It's also a way to compare how are we doing compared to our local school districts and other schools across the country to make sure that, you know, we still have that academic excellence that we strive to have. So it's one little window of looking at that, but it certainly is not the entire thing that mm-hmm. drives our instruction.
How often do you hear from parents about it?
We sometimes have parents who question whether we follow, you know, the core curriculum, and in that of itself, the core curriculum, there's nothing wrong with it. It's what the children should be learning. It's no different, and it's nice to have that consistency across the board so that, you know, my children can go to Holy Cross or the City School District or Fairport or Texas or wherever they go, and we're all learning the same thing in the fourth grade. So that is one perk. So sometimes we have parents who question why we follow that or why we do the New York State assessments, and then we give them the same information that we shared with you, and they usually understand it. And if they don't, they do have that option. We don't present that to them, but they can choose the option of opting out.
Sure, okay. Just a few minutes left with our guests, and I want to direct it back to where we started, which is some of the values-based teaching and the approach that these two schools represented in studio and a parent's perspective as well. And, you know, I did find that interesting that at Nazareth, 70% of the students are not Catholic. Now, most of them come from some kind of a Christian background, but no matter what you think about Jesus, people probably think he was a pretty good teacher and a pretty cool guy. He'd be a pretty fun person to hang out with today. He'd be a pretty good person to have in your community. Mm-hmm. And Nazareth likes to talk about to teach as Jesus did.
Yes.
Sister, what does that mean?
That's actually a document that came out in 1972 by the bishops of New York State. And it is so rich in its meaning that the Catholic schools around New York State have kept it in the forefront all these years. And it has 4 components, and it is to teach the message of Jesus. How do we live day to day? To build community, which is what we're all about in a Catholic school. We build community, we're a family. To be of service, life is not just about ourselves, but how do we reach out to others? And then worship together, so praying together, celebrating together. At Nazareth, that is like an overarching umbrella, and I review it every year, and the teachers laugh at me. I review it every year at our staff meetings just to remind them that's what we're doing, and they laugh because they know it. We also have the scripture passage from Micah, to act justly, to love tenderly, and to walk humbly with our God, and that is our theme with our children. And from that, we draw monthly value, Christian values that we work on, like respect or kindness, and it all comes from that, to teach as Jesus did.
And you talk about, sister, the importance of community and not just thinking about yourself. If Jesus were a high school English teacher, you think he would teach Ayn Rand? No one's ever asked that question on public radio. No one has ever asked that question on public radio.
I don't think I'll speak for Jesus.
Yeah. That's as far as it. Mary, some final thoughts from you on what it means to teach as Jesus did.
I would think our motto at Holy Cross is to be a beacon of hope, and I think that we strive to do that for others. We by educating the whole child, by being a strong family and community, by praying together, it definitely strengthens everything that we do. So I know that Jesus would be proud of us, not only at Nazareth and Holy mm-hmm. Cross, but for, you know, all of our faith-based schools, because it definitely is something that adds so much to the curriculum, being able to talk about your faith and to teach children to be like Jesus.
All right, Deb, about 20 seconds for you as a parent. Some final thoughts on that matter.
I think the service to others and loving your neighbor, just again, like really rounding out the educational experience for my children. That's why I chose Nazareth, so.
Well, it's been nice having this conversation. And if you want to learn more about Holy Cross, for example, you can find information where, Mary?
Oh, you can find us on the web at our Holy Cross website. If you just look at dor.org and search all of our Catholic schools, you'll find a link to not only Holy Cross, but any of the schools in your area. Or you can call us directly at 663-6533.
And sister?
Also go to the Nazareth Elementary website. Check us out there, our Facebook page, or 458-3786. Or just stop in. I always say, come and see. Stop in at Flower City Park. Come and see.
It's 311 Flower City Park.
Yes.
But don't come in yet unless you want to help unload boxes.
We will put them to work.
They're still working. Congratulations on your move.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for sharing your thoughts on education with us this hour.
Thank
Deb,
you,
nice
Evan.
Meeting you. Good luck to your family as well.
Thank you.
And Mary, thank you very much. Good wishes for you as well. Thanks for
thank
sharing
you
your thoughts
having
on
us.
Education. Two good hours on education today. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Mack as the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great afternoon. We'll talk to you Wednesday on Member-supported public radio.